Thanks, Brooke. Last month, the FDA approved Hallucex, a new class of weight loss drug that helps users avoid overeating by producing nightmarish hallucinations whenever food is around. Now, unlike traditional weight loss drugs that work by speeding up the metabolism or preventing the absorption of fat, Hallucex targets the brain's cerebral cortex, stimulating the centers responsible for fear and visual processing. Test subjects reported an unprecedented decrease in appetite and showed dramatic weight loss, with only 18% reporting night terrors or subsequent cardiac arrest.
Poor portion control and snacking between meals are the biggest causes of weight gain. Hallucex eliminates these problems by causing you to throw out or burn any food in your house. It's designed to make fatty and sugary foods even scarier. An apple just looks like it has fangs, but a milkshake will threaten you and your family by name.
Earlier incarnations of the drug proved to be too powerful and produced mental states in which test subjects no longer believed that food had ever existed, an unshakable belief that the subject had to eat all of the food on the planet in order to prevent food from rising up and destroying the human race.
Well, you don't understand. I have to do this.
Or the conviction that food could be negotiated with diplomatically.
I'm sorry, potato salad, but this is as far as I can bend on this.
And with Hallucex set to hit shelves next month, Abbott is rolling out an advertising campaign for what they think will be their most popular drug yet.
Hey everybody, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. I am as shocked as you are to hear those words. Today is May 25th, 2014, and there is a reason why I'm coming back on this day. Significant day in my life and in the show's history. And I'll get to that in a minute. There were a number of reasons why I ended the show when I did, and I never once told Katrina why I really was ending the show, and I think she sensed it, which is why she tried to talk me out of it so many times. But her health had been declining dramatically. In September of 2012, we got really bad news, and that news was that Katrina was not going to live a natural life, that she was going to live years, not decades, as the oncologist put it. We would not be retiring together to Novato, where we planned on spending our old years together. And I thought it was important that I spend that time with her. And not only that, my health, my lifestyle was changing. So there were a number of factors, but that was kind of a major factor. And I'm glad I did it, because things got difficult after I left the show. In May 25th, 2013, a Saturday, 10:15 a.m., Katrina lost her battle with breast cancer. I was with her. And those of you who are close to me, close friends, those of you who friend me on Facebook, I didn't really make an announcement. Word just got out. And then support started piling in. And it was overwhelming. And I appreciated every little bit of it, because I needed it. After ending the show in late September, early October, we kind of knew that we needed to focus, and we were afraid that maybe we weren't going to have a lot of time. So we went to Sonoma one more time that year, and I'm glad we did, because we stayed with some friends who, after Katrina had passed in May, were faced with their own battle. And it was a very strong cancer, and it did not last very long, unfortunately. And that is even more tragic. So I'm sorry, this show probably won't be a shit kicker. I probably won't make you laugh once. Maybe I will, I'm not sure. I say stupid shit all the time, so anything's possible. But I wanted to tell you and catch you up with everything, because I felt like I owed it to myself to talk about it, but I also owed it to you to explain exactly what had happened, because you provided me with a lot of support through all of this, whether it be on Twitter, Facebook, or simply by listening, the comments that you would leave on the site, all of that. It helped. It really did. And so I felt like I owed you this wrap-up, at the very least. In February 2013, we got some bad news. And at this point, every time she'd have a CT scan, I thought, you know, I'm not going to expect good news from the oncologist this time, because I went in every time feeling upbeat just to get kicked in the balls. And, you know, it bummed her out too. And she tried to make me feel better about it. And I'm looking, how the fuck does that work? You're trying to make me feel better? Isn't that my job to do for you? Yet that's how we fought this thing. And I always said, and I told the oncologist this, I go, listen, it's not your job to blow smoke up our ass. It's my job to do that for her and her job to do it for me. Your job is to definitely hit us with what you've got. And in February, she told us that Katrina's cancer had gone from her liver to the bones in her sternum, her lungs, the lymph nodes on the other side of her body, and was working its way toward her brain. That is very, very bad news. This cancer was not going to give up. We were not going to win. In fact, the prognosis went from living years, not decades, to living months, not a year. That was sobering, and that at that point was when Katrina said, well, I'm just going to go ahead and stop working, and we can focus on our life. And when the doctor tells you, get your paperwork together because you don't want to do it when things get bad, you know you're faced with some very, very bad news. And that's what we were getting that day. Cooking became a chore because Katrina, one morning, wakes up and says, you know, her voice was going, couldn't swallow anymore, had a hard time swallowing, and really having a hard time breathing. And she said, I think the cancer's trying to choke me out. And so cooking became a challenge because she could only drink and she could hardly drink. So pureed soups became the thing, broths, juicing, very boring stuff. And the funny thing is that Katrina had a penchant for junk food. She loved it. In fact, she would openly say that she liked, her favorite thing was cheap Mexican food. And that's just, that was comforting to her. So I would try to do things where I would infuse flavors into something healthy. Because I needed her to eat, but I needed her to eat something with sustenance. And also, I needed to keep it healthy. Because I wanted her to get as much in a sip as possible. And she wouldn't drink it in sure or drink juices. And sometimes she would just get bored with stuff. So I would infuse bacon into flavors or, you know, I'd make pureed soups that I knew she liked. And one significant day was my birthday, end of April, about less than a month of before, you know, I lost her. She was bedridden at this point and was upstairs sleeping most of the time, and she'd be on drugs or I'd be watching TV and fall asleep. So I was kind of left to my own devices. So I'd cook a lot. I'd cook for myself mostly because, you know, she wouldn't eat. But I decided I was going to make Nathan Lyon's cauliflower soup because it was pureed and it looked delicious and it also looked healthy. And I thought it would be a nice thing to do. So I sat in the kitchen, cooked this soup, hung out on my iPad on Facebook all day. And any of you who aren't on Facebook, Facebook is a great day in your life is your birthday on Facebook. It's the best place to be because everyone's showering you with love. And it's nice. It's fun to have people wishing you happy birthday on your birthday all day long. So I cooked this soup and I wanted to share the recipe with you because this was a pivotal period and it taught me a lot about my own therapy in getting through this and how food, and this is kind of the basis of the show today, how food and cooking really is the one staple in my life and the one thing about my life I can always count on to get me through a rough time, to get me through a rough stretch. And those of you who think I might start crying during the show, don't bank on it. because that's not going to happen. It's an emotional thing to do, but I've managed to get through this. And I've had my moments, believe me. I'll tell you all about it. But this cauliflower soup was... I looked at the recipe and I thought, this is the perfect thing to make today. And with respect to Nathan, I tell you, Nathan... Just a quick word about Nathan and Sarah. It was just a great couple. They're great together. They were so supportive. Well, they came to Katrina's service and he brought a bundt cake. And people recognized him, you know. And it's just kind of funny how we have, I've maintained this friendship with him because of the show and because of Bobby Bogner. And Bogner was there. You should have seen my... Bogner says, would it be okay if I came and brought this platter of food? And I said, oh, dude, I'd love that you were there. Show of support. He shows with this giant platter, two platters of food, cold cuts and, good Lord, and fruit and stuff. And I'm like, tell you, people who, if you want to know, the times that I would really break down was when friends did stuff like that. That's what would make me cry. That's the stuff that would make me emotional, when I got support. And this show, you guys have given me so much support over the years. Even if you didn't know you were doing it, you were doing it. It really has given back so much more than I've given to it. But Nathan and Sarah were just amazing, and they continue to be amazing and supportive. And I love them to death. Here's what you need if you want to make this cauliflower soup, and believe me, you will not go wrong with this. And cauliflower is, it's all over the place right now. You'll need 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, a medium shallot that you've peeled and chopped, roughly, you don't have to, go crazy, no Brenois, 3 tablespoons about, 5 large garlic cloves, peeled and chopped roughly again, about a tablespoon plus 2 teaspoons. A large head of cauliflower, about 1.5 pounds. Take the leaves off, core it, chop it into small pieces. You don't have to be, you don't have to finesse any of this because you're going to blend it. 3/4 of a pound of Yukon Gold potatoes that you've peeled and diced medium. It's about 3 medium potatoes. And make sure you're using Yukon Gold, not a russet. Yukon Gold's nice and creamy. 2 cups of vegetable or chicken stock. 2 cups of whole milk. 5 sprigs of fresh thyme, 1 dried bay leaf, 2 ounces of fresh goat cheese, about 1/4 cup, 1 tablespoon of freshly squeezed lemon juice, kosher salt to taste, freshly ground black pepper to taste, pecorino romano, some breadcrumbs, and 2 tablespoons of finely chopped fresh chives or fresh cut Italian parsley, whatever you like to do, to garnish. To make this soup, you're going to combine the butter, a tablespoon of butter and 1 tablespoon of olive oil, in a large saucepan, and heat it over a medium-low heat until the butter's melted. Stir in the shallot, cook it for 1 minute until the shallot is soft and kind of translucent. Add the garlic and cook it for about 1 minute until you start to smell the garlic, get it nice and fragrant. And then throw in the cauliflower, throw in the potatoes, add the stock, the milk, the thyme, and the bay leaf. Put a cover on it. Increase the heat to high till you get it to a simmer, and then reduce the heat down to low and continue to simmer it for about 25 minutes. Basically, until the potatoes are falling apart, the cauliflower is completely tender. Remove it from the heat, remove the thyme sprigs, remove the bay leaf, add the goat cheese, the rest of the butter and the olive oil, some lemon juice into the pot. Now you'll use an immersion blender or pour it into a regular blender or food processor and then blend it until the soup is very smooth. Season it with salt and pepper, and you're done. You serve it in soup bowls, top it with fresh grated pecorino romano or parmesan, some breadcrumbs, some chopped chives or parsley, whatever you want to garnish with, and then if you want to grind a little pepper on there, do that. This soup was fantastic. And again, I said it reminded me a lot of Vichyssoise, and it was just perfect that day. And Katrina ate it and liked it, and it did help her, and it was significant because I spent the day doing this and disappeared in that dish, and it wasn't hard to make. Listen, something like this, you're going to put this together in less than an hour, and then what are you going to do with the rest of the day? You have to find things to do with your time, and I'll put a link to Nathan's book on the website if you haven't checked it out. Great Food Starts Fresh. But running had been therapy up to that point. I'd go running because I was running away from my problems. But when you run, you don't think of anything else other than not dying, you know, because you worry about, you know, a heart attack or not making it. But cooking became therapy because I got lost in it. But her inability to actually swallow became a real issue. And so we ended up at a specialist who realized that, you know, the problem was that her trachea was being collapsed by this mass growing in her chest and that it could be alleviated with a stent. So there was this surgery that they had to do on her, which was successful. Unfortunately, there were complications that night as we stayed in the hospital, and things went very south very fast. And they ended up doing some tests and put her in ICU and told me that until they knew, you know, with the situation, I was basically, I couldn't do much. But they, you know, they were going to keep her stable and that I should go home because it had been all night. Take a shower, get some rest, get something to eat. They'll call me or just come back and we'll talk to the doctor. So that became the second time in a month that I had to cook something to comfort myself with. And this time, I decided I was going to make Chris Constantino's white beans and sausage from his book Beginnings. Now, this might seem a very small thing to talk about while you're dealing with the potential loss of your spouse. But I'm telling you that I had to go somewhere. And that somewhere was the kitchen, because I had to disappear into something, or it was going to be very bad for me. So I went home, I took a shower. I really couldn't sleep because sleep wasn't on my agenda. Clark was not doing well because, it's a funny thing about pets, cats and dogs, man, they're so in tune with human beings. And he became her nurse. Any of you who are friends on Facebook or followed, you know, what was going on, we called him Nurse Clark because he would nap with her and he literally would crawl up on her and put his paw out to where the cancer mass was growing in her chest. Literally put his paw right on it. How do these animals know this? But when she wasn't there, and she was in the hospital, he cried for her, openly cried, and it was breaking my heart. And after I made this dish, I just sat down to eat it, and I thought to myself, I am not hungry, but I have to eat. And I went to this dish, sausage and beans, because it was rustic and simple and Italian. And it reminded me of something that maybe my mom would have liked to have. Because when you go right down to it, it's about where your soul is as a cook. And my soul has always been in red sauce and sausages. The reason why I make sausage, because it just reminds me of the stories my mom would tell me about my grandmother in the old country. But Chris says, you know, that this was a dish for a cold and snowy night, and here I am, I was going to make it in May. And I had already started to prep it, because I thought we were going to come home. So I started making this before we ended up in the hospital. You know, the beans are cooked way in advance. You cook them with fennel and carrot and onion, and then you simmer them with sausages and some sage leaves and some red sauce. So I made this dish, and I wanted to share it with you too, because, again, this is another significant dish and ties into this story very well. I took about a pound of dried white beans. You get them large if you can. And you could use cannellini beans if you can't find large white beans. And about 3 quarts of pork stock, which I basically made with a pork bone from a shoulder. And just simmered it, just like you would make chicken stock. 6 cloves of garlic that I crushed. A whole fennel bulb. Basically, you trim it and halve it. A carrot, yellow onion, 4 plum tomatoes. That you get from a can, so make sure they're stewed. You can stew them yourself, or just get some really good, like San Manzano tomatoes. That's what I was using. Just 4 of those. 1 tablespoon of olive oil. 4 sweet Italian sausages. If you want to use hot, you can. Mild sausage usually works best with this. It doesn't compete with anything else. 4 fresh sage leaves. If you're growing sage in your garden, sage leaves are really good in this dish. And some kosher salt and freshly ground black pepper. So pick over the beans, discard any grit or any beans that don't look good. Rinse them with cold water, transfer them to a pot, add some water to cover by about 2 inches, and let it stand overnight. Again, this is one of those dishes, it takes a while to make it, but it's a labor of love dish. And always take beans and soak them overnight to let them absorb a little water before you cook them. When you cook them, they'll go quickly. Then drain the beans, return them to the pot, add the pork stock, two of the garlic cloves, the fennel, the carrot, the onion, and the tomatoes, and then place that over medium heat, bring it to a simmer, cover it, and cook for about an hour. You never want to really cook these beans at high heat because it'll break the beans up. It'll really beat the shit out of them. You don't want to do that. You know, keep them solid, so you cook at a lower heat so they don't boil too much. They don't roll around. And cook them for about 2 to 3 hours until they're tender. You can, you know, keep tasting. And the timing will depend on the age of the beans, okay? If they're older, they'll take a lot longer. Remove them from the heat. Let the beans cool in the cooking liquid. And then remove and discard the carrot, the fennel, and the onion. Now, select a heavy frying pan, large enough to hold sausages and the beans without really crowding anything, because you want everything to cook evenly. Add the olive oil to the pan, warm it over medium heat, then add the sausages and the remaining garlic cloves and cook the sausages, turning, make sure you don't burn them, and just get them really nicely browned. Add the sage, heat that until it sizzles, add the beans and the cooking liquid, and cook all of this, stirring occasionally until heated all the way through, about 5 minutes. Season with salt and pepper, continue to simmer. Stir gently, don't break anything up, till the sausages are completely cooked through and the bean liquid thickens a little bit. And as you stir, you want to be careful. Don't break up the beans because, you know, the dish gets ugly once beans start to break. You end up with like a puree of beans. Pour the beans into a bowl. Put a sausage in each bowl if you're doing this just for two people, maybe two sausage a piece. And that's the dish. The problem for me was I sat down to eat this and I couldn't eat. And part of the reason why I couldn't eat was because, and I knew I had to, so I did. But I had a hard time because, you know, I felt like the news I was going to get when I got back to the hospital was not going to be good. And on top of that, Clark was crying. And I remember yelling to him, "You're not making this any easier on me. I'm having a hard time too." That was hard. That was hard. And it's really hard to eat and cry at the same time. But that is what I did, and I ate because I had to. And here's the deal. Up to this point, I'm losing weight because I'm running, and I'm getting in shape, and I mean, I'm trying to, you know, get fit. The last 2 months, I was losing weight from stress. So now I've got bad news from the hospital, and I've got to deliver it to the family. And we've got a couple days to get everyone around, and basically get everyone there to see her before we have to, you know, make a difficult decision. And while we're in the waiting room, one of my cousins sees me and she says, "Phil, you have lost way too much weight." And I said, "Well, I'll admit to you, it's because I'm just too stressed out. I can't eat. I'm not hungry." And she says, "Well, you have to eat." And I said, "No, I just, you know, it's no big deal. I'll eat later." What she ends up doing is going to the deli or the cafeteria at the hospital and buys me a hamburger. Now, hospital cafeteria hamburger, do I have to tell you what that looks like or tastes like? I'm a snob when it comes to hamburgers. But I should tell you that this hamburger on that day that she bought for me was one of the best hamburgers I've ever had in my life. And it reminded me of that bit that Eddie Murphy used to do about the prisoner. You throw him a Ritz cracker, and he hasn't eaten in 3 days. And he's going, "Oh, is that a Ritz cracker? That's delicious. You gotta be kidding me. That's a Ritz cracker? Is that what they taste like now? That's the best cracker I've ever had. Best Ritz cracker ever." Because you're so hungry, anything tastes great. And your whole outlook on food changes just like that. So May 25th, that was the day. And it was sad. And my friends rallied around me. I was told that we might have a couple days, we might have a couple hours, but that I could come and just stay there. And so I didn't want to have to go anywhere, because if she was going to last a while, I wanted to be there. I didn't want to be sleeping or eating or doing something else other than being there and miss it. So one of my friends, David, who is an amazing baker, also happens to make really good chicken and dumplings, which is a great comfort food that I like, and his especially. So he made some for me, thinking I might be there for a few days and that I might need something in the room that I could just have. And he brought it for me. After, you know, she had passed, he brought it anyway. And I took it home that night with my friends Donna Maria, and we heated it up, and we had that for dinner. And we had a good night. We drank some beer and watched some old video and just talked about stuff. And it was a nice way of ending a very, very sad day. But cooking after that kind of took the place of everything for me. It was therapy. It was my life. And I realized why it was so important. Joe and Peter became my escape. They had me up in LA quite a few times, spent the night. We went and did things. We went and ate. I had Big Gay Ice Cream, which is a big gay ice cream truck. It's like soft serve ice cream. I think they're from New York. They're Octavia Bourdain's friends. And it's great. And there's really wacky toppings. Line down the street. CJ from Top Chef, Chris Jacobson, I think. He's the chef at Girasol in Hollywood. Very good food. Honest cooking. Had his food. I got into pickling. Because I love making pickles. Got into pickling, got into preserving. I did olives again, because I love doing olives. And last year, I found two different types of olives from two different sources. And so I made more olives last year than I've made in my life. And that was just fantastic. Clark started losing more weight. And I think he had impending health issues anyway. Maybe he was holding on for Katrina, I don't know. His decline was imminent, of course. He was getting older. And it was another thing that was hard on me. But I think he was holding on for Katrina. But early July, depression really kind of sank in for me finally. And all these things they say you're going to deal with when you lose a spouse, you do get those things. You might not get all of them, but you'll get a lot of them. And how you deal with them is your own thing. Everyone deals with it differently. I was trying to hurry up and deal with it. Because the thing with me was this. 2 years before this happened, I knew I was going to live alone one day. So I started to prep myself for what that might be like. The difference is this. I'm downstairs cooking, she's upstairs sleeping. Anytime I want to come upstairs, here she is. Finally, she's not here. Now guess what? You're alone. For real. How you deal with that, it's up to you. So I dealt with it in my own way. I went to some support groups, which didn't help at all. In fact, made things worse. I went back to food for therapy. I started cooking things that she would never eat. She hated seafood for some reason. Didn't like it. I mean, like seafood fish. She just didn't like fish. Much. I had to force her to eat it. And there were times when, even if it was something she liked before, she didn't like it. So I started making dishes that I would see on Top Chef or see other chefs cook and think, I can make that. I want to make that. And I would make it. A pan-fried cod over a chickpea puree. Simple, but delicious. Then I started doing things that I was spending more time in the kitchen. Like after work, I'd leave work out at like 4 o'clock. And I'd spend 3 to 4 hours in the kitchen doing something like making ravioli. Making fresh pasta, then ravioli. My grandmother's sauce. Because it helped me. It helped me cope. And I wouldn't mind doing it. And I think at one point, and I would snap pictures of stuff and post on Instagram, I said, listen, just because you're alone doesn't mean you have to stop cooking. And a lot of people like to use that excuse. It's like, oh, I have a lot of leftovers. So don't cook so much. Or have the leftovers for breakfast. Are leftovers that bad? But cooking wasn't about eating for me. It was about what I was doing with my time and getting lost in it. And it really did help me. I volunteered at the LA Food Bank with LA Bites Hunger. That was a great event. I discovered pour over coffee, which, you know, on paper looks like a pain in the ass, but it's really not that bad. You heat water, you grind beans, and it is quite simply the best cup of coffee I've ever had. And it's the only way I'll make coffee now. But like the night I spent 3 hours in the kitchen making ravioli gave me a sense of normalcy, like things were back to normal for me. And I don't ever want to know life differently than that. And as rough as October could have been for me, it really wasn't that bad. And I realized that, you know, Halloween was that time of the year that we always spent more time on things and concentrated most of our year on that 1 month, dinner parties and things like that. It changed for me. For the better, I made it my own. And going forward, I'm going to make it even more my own, different, because I think that's important. I threw my first dinner party without Katrina, Dia de los Muertos. It's a Day of the Dead, basically. It's celebrated in Mexico mostly on November 2nd, and you celebrate those who have passed. And the funny thing is that for all the Halloween stuff that we used to, you know, surround ourselves with, it was Dia de los Muertos that I focused on more. Why? Because I found the art a little bit more rustic. Simple. But also it had meaning. And one year we threw a party for no reason other than just to celebrate those who had passed. But we really didn't have anybody to celebrate specifically. And this year I did. And I thought she would have liked the fact that we did this. But it was also the first time that I'd had more than one person over for dinner. This was kind of a big thing for me. I had some close friends, couples, and some family. And I did the whole thing myself. And I made Mexican food. Not my forte, but I, you know, classed it up a little. And it was fantastic. And I felt good about it. And after that, I decided that I was going to make this trip up to Sonoma. Because Katrina had asked me to make sure that, you know, she was cremated and then take her ashes to Sonoma. She didn't say where, she just said Sonoma. So I thought, I'll take her to her favorite places and kind of spread her in a place here, a place there, and then maybe over time the wind kicks up and her ashes will just kind of rejoin and she'll overlook the entire valley, Russian River. And it will be good for her, that she'll be where she wanted to be. So I made this decision to do this between Christmas and New Year's. And this is when things really started to fall into place for me. I opened myself up to the idea that maybe, you know, if I did meet somebody even casually, it would be nice just to have a friend. So if it happened, I'd be okay with it. I wasn't going to fight it. But I was feeling pretty good about myself. I was dealing with a lot of stuff, and most of it was my past and my, you know, the way I was. And I think, you know, when you're in a supporting role like this as a caregiver and you're giving so much, you start to, you know, lose sight of yourself. Why did I stop eating? Well, I'm stressed out. So you get back, you get your health back a little bit. Everything starts to change for the better for you. I had a vegan meal. This is a funny story. Katrina had this Pilates instructor. She'd tell me about her. Her name was Allison. She goes, if we had a daughter, I would want this girl to be our daughter. I said, really? Because she's so amazing, so sweet, and very nice, and she's really attentive to my needs. Because, you know, Katrina was trying to work her way back so she could have the surgery, and she needed to be in shape. I forgot about Allison, and I never emailed her or contacted her to let her know that, you know, we'd lost her. And so about a week before this Dia de los Muertos party, I'm out with Maria, my friend, shopping for some stuff for it, and I get an email from her. Well, I get an email from... It's in Katrina's email box. How are you? Haven't heard from you in a while. And I thought, oh, shit. I forgot to email this girl. So I had to write this, compose this email to tell her what had happened, and I apologize, and I'm sorry you had to hear like this. And she's devastated. As it turns out, she had lost somebody just before meeting Katrina, but never shared it with her. So she'd been through it. And she told me, she goes, I know how difficult this is, and if, you know, if you need to talk about it, I can, you know, I'd love to talk about it. So eventually I said, yeah, let's talk about it. Because, you know, someone who'd been through it, I know the support groups didn't help me, but maybe someone like her who has a better insight on it. And she knew Katrina anyway. Why not? So I said, she goes, I'll bring food to you. And I said, no, listen, you don't bring food to me. I bring food to you. So I said, And I said, you know what? Better yet, why don't I cook dinner? You come over, I'll cook dinner, we can talk. Okay. So she says, you know what? That's too much trouble. I said, no, it's not too much trouble. She goes, yeah, really, it is too much trouble. Let's just go someplace. I'm thinking, you know what? It's not too much trouble. I love to cook. Anything you like, let me know. I'll cook it. I insist. Katrina would have insisted. So what happens? She goes, okay. But I should remind you, I'm a vegan. And I thought, oh, fuck me. Vegan. So now I'm faced with cooking a vegan meal, so I'm looking up vegan recipes, and I realized then that a lot of what we're already eating could be considered vegan. Cut out dairy, cut out meat of any kind, anything that involves an animal, cut it out, you're a vegan. So if you all you eat are vegetables, you're a vegan. Basically, I wanted to make chocolate chip cookies, and I discovered coconut oil and almond milk take the place of butter, and I made vegan chocolate chip cookies. And she said they were the best she'd ever had. And they were good cookies. And this led me down a path that I'm at now, currently, this whole coconut oil thing. And I'll hit on that in a bit. But I met these other kids, these 20-somethings in September. I started hanging out with them. This Dave, Katrina worked with him, and he wanted to learn how to brew beer. So this was years ago. I taught him how to brew beer. I met his roommates. They're all, you know, mid-20s, living together. And they party. They love to have a good time. So I started hanging out with them. And I started cooking for them. And then they started showing an interest in food and cooking. And that led to some other things that I was doing for them in regards to food. And that was fun. And this led to a pre-Thanksgiving tapas party that I wanted to throw. And tapas parties were one of those things that we loved doing because we didn't have to sit down to eat and serve courses. So I would make like 8 different types of basically appetizers. And you lay them out, and then you graze all night and drink and talk. And you don't have to cook all the time. You do everything in advance, set it all out, and party. And so that's what we did. And that night, Dave opened my eyes to just how easy it was to meet women casually or seriously if you wanted. And it was on that night that my future, the present that I know today, became a reality. And on December 7th, which was the 3-year anniversary of Katrina's diagnosis, I had no idea that this was going to happen. On this day, I met Michelle, the person that I know that maybe deep down inside, either Katrina or someone sent her to me, or at least steered me toward her. She was everything I needed when I needed it and continues to be that person for me today. One of the greatest people that I've ever known, a person so giving, so selfless, that sometimes she casts a shadow that I can't get out of. And she has 2 daughters. Everything I could never have imagined, yet now wouldn't really want to know life without. But I had to take Katrina's ashes to Sonoma after Christmas. So you know when you meet somebody and you like them and they like you back and you kind of want to start something, but you're not sure, you got to slow things down. I knew that this was something important that I had to do. I needed closure. And my trip home from that, and there were so many people that wanted to go with me or meet me up there, and I just had to do this by myself. The trip home, which I thought was going to be the hard part of the trip, was actually the best part of the trip because it was enlightening. It was time for me to think of me, for all that I've done, for all that I'd been through. And believe me, I'd do it again in a heartbeat, regardless of the outcome. I did everything she asked me to do and gladly did it. And now it was time for me to focus on myself. So here I am today. My health is so much better. I've changed so much in the last few months. I'm very careful about what I put into my body. Michelle has an all-natural approach. Coconut oil is a big thing for her. There's so many uses of coconut oil. And not just for food. I put almond milk in my lattes. So dairy, I've kind of cut back on dairy because I started to realize I was having a problem with dairy. Some dairy. All of this stuff. Our garden, my garden flourishes now because she's got a meticulous attention to detail. She's really into it. It's very nice. And one thing, this is really funny. One thing I always wanted to do, but Katrina was adamantly against, was getting a tattoo. And what I wanted was Anthony Bourdain's Cook for Your Die logo. And I wanted to put it on my left calf. So when I was riding my bike or running past somebody on the trail, they could see my skull with a knife in his mouth. And when I met Michelle, she showed me her tattoos, which were basically very simple. There's just 2 lines of type on each arm that basically reminded her to be kind to every person she meets because everyone is fighting some kind of a battle. And the funny thing about Michelle is that she is as beautiful on the inside as she is on the outside. And you should see the outside. I never thought I would meet somebody like her, and I certainly didn't think I'd meet somebody like her as quickly as I did. But I also know that there's a reason for everything. And I mentioned to her just how I wanted to get this tattoo on my body and how the whole idea of this logo represented my life as a foodie. She told me I should get it, but I should get it by somebody who was really like the best at his craft. So she introduces me to Dan Smith of Capture Tattoo in January. There's a shop here, not far from where I live. We set up an appointment that night after dinner, and in March, he did his best work, and I love this thing. I'm very proud of it, and it really is a representation of who I am, why I do what I do, and a reminder that I'm always going to be a cook. I will always be a foodie. I'm a lifer, just like all of you. And the essence of this is that from the time I start to chop vegetables and apply heat to the saute pan, add the olive oil, and begin to make this dish, and the complexities grow as I add things, as time progresses, as we heat and continue to add ingredients and build a dish to the time we set it on the table and we eat it and we realize that what we've just done is compose the perfect song, a sonata of food. That's why I do this. It's craftsmanship, but it's also therapy. I get quite a bit from it. And I'm not sure where I go from here. I'm not sure the show comes back. I had started to work on a Dude Food Cookbook, which is an interactive cookbook for iPad and all iOS devices. And I shelved it. This was long before I ended the show. I shelved it because it was just going to take too much time. And I couldn't do everything. But I've since brought that back. And I'm working on it a lot, actually. I've done a lot of writing on it. And a lot of... it's going to have video and interactive. And it's very funny. I'm not sure if we do more videos or what I'm going to do. I'm cooking for children now, which is another potential challenge that I live every day. And I like it. It's a lot of fun. It's challenging. Probably the most challenging that I've ever experienced. Even more challenging than cooking for Katrina. And they're great eaters, these two. They love raw vegetables. They'll pull it out of the ground and eat it. They're not into too many fried things. All natural anything. And their favorite meal that I make, Thomas Keller's roast chicken with a green salad with raw cucumbers, and they are mad for his potato puree. I just won't tell them just how much butter is in it. But in closing, I just want to remind you all about one thing that I hit on at Katrina's funeral when I eulogized her. And that is to live every day like it's your last, because we're not guaranteed tomorrow. And don't die with regrets. Katrina didn't die with regrets. And enjoy life every day, because the fact of the matter is that no one is going to get out of here alive. And I made the decision to move on as quickly as I did because I learned this lesson above all else. What Katrina told me, if this thing takes me, don't let it take you too. That was her famous quote that I will always remember. If, not when, if. Because she was defiant. She didn't think it was going to take her for sure. There was always that chance. But go, be happy, live your life. I want a happy future. I've earned it, and I'm going to have it starting yesterday. I wasn't about to let cancer define me, because this show has done a fine enough job of that already. And I think some risks are just worth taking. And when you find yourself staring right into someone's soul the very first time you meet them, you'd be a fool to deny yourself of at least taking that chance. Just as I've taken a chance every single time I've opened the mic to do this show, especially this one. This particular episode, I've taken a big chance. Music in this episode from Bombay Dub Orchestra and Shotgun Radio. And whether we talk again or not, I thank you for listening to my story, for being there through my journey, and for continuing to live your best life. My name is Phil, and this has been My Life as a Foodie. Ciao.